What's up, everybody? It's Shelby with Hooks, Books, and Crime, and it's Crafting Story Time. Today, I will be finishing Wilfred's Halloween sweater. I didn't make the skull bigger. I don't know why. I didn't feel like doing the math to increase it any more than I already had, which really, now that I think about it, I probably just needed to increase, like, in the corners, and I didn't feel like it for whatever reason. So, I don't know. He's, like, small, medium, so I think he'll be all right. Anyway, so I actually won't be crocheting. I'll be weaving in ends and sewing to get this done. And then I'll post some stuff of him wearing it. Because my cat, Cookie, the sweater I made her, she said no bueno. So, okay. I should have known better. Honestly, she's a fidgety little bitch. She's mean. Our story today takes place in Farmville, Virginia. We're 2 hours outside of Richmond. And Emma Niederbrock. I apologize if I change her last name. I believe it's Niederbrock. I keep catching myself saying Niederbrock. But I believe it is Niederbrock. So if I'm going in between, it's because I'm trying to correct myself. But Emma Niederbrock is a 16-year-old homeschooled student. And she's actually raised by both of her parents. Her father is a pastor in a Presbyterian church. And her mom, Deborah, her father's name is Mark. Deborah is a professor at Longwood University. She teaches sociology and criminal justice. So Emma is, both of her parents are accomplished people. They seem very smart and sophisticated. I couldn't find anything of whether Emma was in sports or any extracurricular activities like a lot of homeschool kids are. So from what it sounds like, she must have been a little isolated being at home all the time. And her home life had actually changed a year before when her father moved out of the house. Her parents separated. They did not divorce. But she was now just living alone with her mom, Deborah. And we all know 16, whether you're a boy or a girl, is a tough age. But luckily, her father, it's not one of those situations where the parents separated and the dad just leaves. No, Mark was still very involved. And they were actually all going to therapy together because he wanted to work on his marriage. He would stop by the house, he'd visit them. He wasn't just going to let her go. So in 2009, while Emma is going through all this, she actually finds community within a group that is all into a music genre called horrorcore. I am not familiar with the music, and I looked it up, and I remember seeing it on Web of Lies. Definitely not my thing, to be honest, and I don't know if I could be very wrong. It reminded me of ICP, so it seemed very Juggalo-ish. I could be wrong, though, because I don't know what genre ICP is. I'm not a Juggalo, or I'm not into that. Not my thing. But that's where she found community, especially online on MySpace. She found her community there, and she bonded with other people with the likes of music. And then there was an artist named Rezakel, and she is very involved in the community. She was a rapper herself, and she actually introduced Emma to her best friend, Melanie. Melanie lived in West Virginia. So I believe they were about 4 hours away from each other. And these girls really hit it off. They really related to each other. And they begin a blossoming friendship. And they spend as much time together as they can. And of course, like all parents who, when their child starts venturing into something they don't understand, that's different, they become concerned. Horrorcore, apparently, a lot of the lyrics seem to talk about violence, a lot of death, maybe some mental illness. It covers a lot of that, but what rock music doesn't at this point? I think that was the whole point of it. It's very angsty. It's very the dark side of humanity, or not necessarily the dark side of humanity, but a lot of us at some point feel like we're right on that edge of slipping into something darker, or we're trying to come out of something hard. And if she's going through these changes at home, it makes a lot of sense why she would gravitate this way. This became such a concern that it was mentioned in therapy that was covered, her parents' concern for this kind of music. And it does seem that she was raised in a more traditional home. So her parents, you know, they were all for Emma expressing herself. They were supportive. They drew a line where they felt they needed to. Emma wasn't sheltered either. If she wanted to go to concerts or events, the only thing was her parents chaperoned. And I feel like especially since she was homeschooled and her best friend lives in a different state, it could be one of those situations where you don't really want to go with your parents, but because you're so isolated and you just want to be out and you want to be amongst your people, you don't care if you're with your parents. Fine, I just want to go. I just want to get out of this house. So her parents would go with her. I didn't see anything really that said that they maybe hovered or they were too overbearing while she was out. She seemed to have a good relationship with her parents. She didn't seem like an unhappy child or a child who's listening to this music that has dark imagery and dwelling in it and falling into a hole. It didn't seem like that was the case here. She seemed to be a pretty happy kid. Now, within this community, Emma meets a rapper, or an aspiring rapper, I should say. She meets Richard McCroskey, who goes by two different names. One of his rap names is Lil Demon Dog, which that's embarrassing. The other one being Psycho Sam. And he is very involved in the community online as well. He has a lot of friends online and he seems very confident. Him and Emma seem to really take to each other. They're constantly calling each other. They're sending each other videos of each other. At one point, she's posting on his wall or that she loves him. Doesn't seem like they were in a relationship, especially because she's over here in Virginia and Richard's actually in California. They're different coasts, but they correspond back and forth online for over a year. Both of them, just talking about the music together and being involved in the community together, growing in the community together. They became close enough that when a horrorcore festival came up in Michigan, Emma actually asked her parents if Richard could come to Virginia and if her parents would drive her, Richard, and Melanie to this festival. And it was a 10-hour drive. And her parents agreed. My only concern here is that Emma's 16 and Richard is 20. So that is concerning. 4 years isn't that big of a difference when maybe you met in high school together, or it was your brother's friend, you knew each other for years, or a sibling, something like that. For this to be someone online, that is a little concerning. I have no doubt Deborah had concerns, which is why they were going to chaperone. The plan was Richard would fly into Virginia, they would go to the festival, and Richard would actually stay at the house with them for a few days, and they would drop him off at the airport to fly back home. Melanie too would be staying these days as well, especially when you're traveling so far. Make the stay worthwhile. Emma can be amongst her friends for a few days. And really, it sounds like something I wish my parents would have done for me if that were the situation. Her parents were, again, they're letting her venture out, express herself, but with boundaries, with supervision. And Emma's through the moon at this. She's very excited. She writes on his wall, "I'm gonna be picking you up in an hour, baby," or something like that. But she does call him baby. They call each other pet names. They're telling each other they love each other. And when you're a teenager and you're gonna hang out with a boy that you like, that's already a big deal. This is a boy that's flying across the country to see her that she's never met before. So this relationship has built and built and built. And finally, we're at the tipping point of where this is gonna go, where this could go. We don't know which way it's gonna lean. When Richard arrives, he's a little bit different than what Emma expects, and it seems like the biggest concern being is that Richard is far less confident than he was online, which I think now in this day and age, we understand that that's how a lot of it is, a lot of people are. It's a whole second identity of who you wish you could be, who you really want to be, but you're too afraid to be in person. So you build this persona up online, and that's what Richard did. Richard is far more quiet and somber, and I don't think it helped that him and Emma weren't clicking really right away. So there's a little bit of distance there between the two. They still drive the 10 hours to the music festival, and this is where things kind of take a turn. There are different things and different sources as to what may have occurred during this music festival, but what we can sum it up to is jealousy at the end of the day. Some sources say that Emma was completely ignoring Richard. Some say that she was seeking attention from other boys there. And some say that she received a text from another guy while she was there with Richard that said something unfavorable. I'm guessing that's, or not unfavorable for him, something that implied that she was in a relationship or at least flirting and giving her attention and entertaining to another guy. And they were very awkward together after this. It wasn't a good vibe. However, when they get home, it seems like both of them are okay. They kind of got over it. He was still going to stay the few days with them, so it wasn't a situation where he just wants to fly back home. So after they arrive from the festival, Melanie's mom actually cannot get a hold of her daughter. And she begins to become a little concerned, but teenagers, they're out and about. She knows she's with her friends. But it becomes more alarming when not only can she get a hold of Melanie, but she can't get a hold of Deborah. And Deborah is very prompt with her responses. Deborah knows the concern that a parent would have in these situations, and she doesn't want to make anybody worry. So she's very on top of her responses, making sure she's getting back to them, making sure Melanie is calling her mom if her mom's reaching out and can't get a hold of her. And suddenly, Deborah isn't responding. Emma's not responding. So she calls the police. The police are called, and she also eventually she does get an answer on the phone, and it's Richard who answers. And he's kind of the only one that she can get a hold of after a while. And he always has these different stories. Oh, they went to the movies, they're asleep. Somehow they're always doing something and can never come to the phone. And she doesn't like this after a certain point because, again, it doesn't make sense that Deborah isn't answering at all. So she calls the police. And at first, you can tell the police are kind of just brushing her off. They aren't too concerned. I believe Melanie was 18 at the time, so they just thought she was being, a young adult and doing what she wants to do. Finally, she does get an officer to go and do a wellness check at the house. Richard is the only one who answers the door. He talks to them and he tells them the same thing, some bogus story that they're out, blah, 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 and the police leave. They didn't see any reason for them to go inside and search the house. However, Melanie's mom will not relent, as she shouldn't. As it is, she talks to Richard again and she basically voices her concern about the fact that she can't get a hold of them. And Richard tells her, like, you know what, fine, I'll call the police. Or somehow she talks to Richard again, she calls the police again, and at this point, Richard decides to call the police himself. However, Richard calls the police to let them know that he's hearing sounds in the basement of his girlfriend's house, and he's too scared to go and look himself, so he calls the police for them to check it out for him. And they do. They show up, they go inside the house, and again, they don't see any causes for concern. They check the whole basement for him. They don't find anything, and they're on their way. What's concerning is the fact that there had already been so many calls from Melanie's mom to that address for them to not check any more of the perimeter, I think, is concerning. But according to the police, there were no signs that anything sinister had taken place and that anything suspicious was going on. However, police get another call from Melanie's mom the next day, and Melanie's mom tells them that her husband went to pick up Melanie from the house. He drove 4 hours. Nobody was home. He waited outside. He waited 8 hours, and there was no movement within the house. And there was nobody who showed up again, and nobody is still answering their phones. Even Richard's not answering the phone at this point. So he drives back home and tells his wife, like, something's wrong and you need to call the police. This time, the police do see the concern and they go ahead and do a wellness check. And once they enter this house, they are stepping into a massacre. Bloody setting where the worst has happened. So as they search the house, they find Melanie, Deborah, and Emma all deceased. They have all been killed by blunt force trauma to the head. None of them have any defensive wounds. So it seems like they were all killed while they were sleeping and they were in different rooms. Melanie was on the couch, Emma was in her room, and Deborah was in her room when this happened, and it seems as if he moved the bodies to try to put them in a different room. As they search the rest of the house, they go upstairs and they find Mark dead upstairs in a bedroom. He is also killed by head trauma. It's discovered later that the weapon that was used was a ball-peen hammer as well as a splitting maul. I had to look up what a splitting maul is, and if you're unaware, it's actually used for chopping wood. It looks like an axe, however, it has like this thick weight at the end to really help the force drive through the log, so it's heavier than an axe. It's far more industrial. It seems they realize that they've been dead for a few days. They come to the realization after the medical examiner's report that they were already dead and in the house. when the police came and checked the basement for Richard. And they know, after talking and being there to check the basement, that Richard is definitely somebody that they need to find and they need to question him. He's already gone. He left the house. So with Richard, they start searching for him and they do find him at an airport. And it seems like he just kind of kept slipping through everything. You know, he had already committed these murders when the police go to the house and he's talking to them with so much ease and not raising any red flags to where they check the basement and they leave, not questioning anything about the state of the house, didn't even look through the house. When the police went to do the wellness check and actually entered, they could smell death, which draws so many more questions about what was the odor and the visuals that were there when they came to check the basement. So, and as it is, Richard actually stole Mark's car when he left. He crashed it. An officer comes by, takes a report. He tells him, you know, well, it's actually my girlfriend's dad's car. He let me borrow it. He gets it towed, and the tow truck driver does say that he reeked, that he had a foul smell, and it really puzzled him as to what would make him smell like this. So after this ride with the tow truck, he then hails a cab. The cab driver is pulled over, I believe, for speeding. An officer comes by, and Richard is still unfazed with an officer. He's outside the car smoking. Tells him, like, oh, I'm just trying to get to the airport. He actually just leaves the cab, walks off. And again, nobody is concerned with anything. I guess nobody could smell him at right now, or nobody, I don't know. And he makes it to the airport. He actually still had, I believe, a few days until his flight. So he was just going to kill time at the airport. And that's where he was arrested. They found him sleeping at the airport, and when they saw his clothes, he did reek, and he was still covered in caked blood, which mind-boggling, and it makes you wonder if maybe there just wasn't a lot of crime in this town to where police just never considered that this kid is dirty because he's covered in blood. It's just so many questions, really. So who is Richard McCroskey? Richard McCroskey, again, he is from California. He's 20 years old. He is a high school dropout, and he actually, growing up, suffered severe bullying. Kids were very mean to him. He was socially awkward, and he dropped out of high school. But he was actually very good at web design and graphic design, so he would get freelance jobs and would work that way and earn an income. He still lived at home. However, recently, his dad had actually asked his mom to move out, which makes me think him and Emma probably bonded over that, a separation of parents. So at the time when he flew over to meet Emma, he was only living with his dad and his sister, and he was very awkward. He was antisocial, and when they searched his stuff, they actually found that he had recorded himself after the murders in Emma's house. He had recorded himself talking about how he had to do what he had to do. He couldn't take it anymore. God told him to do it. And that he knew that he was going to have to pay the consequence of his actions. So he knew. He did contemplate suicide, however. He never went through with it. I think he wanted to have the consequence. I think he knew it's what he deserved, so he didn't take the coward's way out. Among this, they learned that he actually was still sleeping in that house for a few days with the dead bodies, and he had murdered the girls first and Deborah. He murdered them, and it seems like Mark, possibly because he couldn't get a hold of Deborah or any of them, Mark stopped by to check on everybody, unbeknownst to him that Richard was actually waiting, and once he got him in a room alone, he cornered him and killed him too. So we never know exactly why. He never says why, but again, I think a lot of this is due to rejection by Emma, and even some jealousy. He thought that they were exclusive. And when you look at the comments, what they were sending each other, I could see the confusion. However, especially when you're that age, you don't realize that you have to have that conversation of exclusivity. I mean, there's always the "what are we" talk, if y'all remember those. If you're, you know, my age, "what are we?" But maybe because they were online, they felt it wasn't necessary. Maybe somebody was lying to the other. Who knows? Doesn't really matter though, because this was unnecessary and horribly brutal. So once arrested, Richard accepts a plea deal. And in this plea deal, he pleads guilty to two counts of capital murder, as well as two counts of first degree murder. In this plea deal, he does waive his appeal rights, so he'll never be able to challenge his conviction, and he is sentenced to life in prison. Richard McCroskey will never get out. He will die there. It seems fair for what he did, especially over something so small. Rejection. It's just, even if you've been rejected most of your life, it's a hard thing to deal with, yes. But it is a passage in life. Now, so the eerie thing about this story is that I actually started researching this story on October 15th, which would have been Emma's 33rd birthday. She's a year younger than me. So I thought that was just very creepy. And then the fact that her death, or the last that she had been heard, that anybody had heard from them, was on my ex-boyfriend's birthday. That guy was a red flag, so beware September 14th, I don't know. That is the story of what is known as the Farmville Murder. As you can see, I just finished weaving in all these ends. I have three that I need to weave in still, and then I will be done. So if you're watching on YouTube, I thank you for joining me. If you're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anything else that you use, I appreciate you being here. I do ask that you like, subscribe, share, follow me. I'm mainly on TikTok. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram as well. Please get the word out for this channel, and I'll catch you on the next one. Okay, bye.